An interview with Louise Millsap at her home at 4040 Pine Avenue, Long Beach, California. The date is December 11, 1985, and the interviewer is Ann Andres.
Do you query me, or do I volunteer? Do I
say? I'll start out, and then you just keep on going as you want. I know you weren't born in Long Beach. Where were you born, Louise?
In Chicago, Illinois. And I spent all of my childhood and youth there and went to school there. I went to a very progressive school called Francis Parker from the time I was in first grade through high school, and then I attended the University of Chicago.
What was your family name?
Nordell, and that's spelled N-O-R-D-E-L-L. And my father's family came from Sweden, which accounts for the name. I think we were rather fortunate because my grandfather didn't pursue the patronymic of using Johansson and becoming Johansson. And this was some family name that he just picked up.
Hmm.
And my mother's family came from upper New York State and had been there since the first Indians arrived, I think. And they met, and they were quite young. Mother had just finished Mount Holyoke and was down in New York teaching, and my father was working down there for the city of New York as a civil engineer. And let's see, what else about my youth? Well, I met Cliff during World War II. He just transferred from Canadian Air Force, and we were married shortly thereafter.
You met him in Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I met him through a group of friends. In fact, he was at a party, and it just, as so many of those things are, it seemed to be fate.
Well, had you been working at the time?
Yes, I had. Mm-hmm. And, but my work had nothing to do but with a history, being a history major.
You were a history major?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
There's small call for history majors outside of the academic field.
Yes.
But it's been a great source of pleasure to me all my life.
Well, I think you told me you were married once before.
Yes, I was married once before, and I had a child by that marriage, and I was widowed. And then when Richard was a couple of years old, I met Cliff, and we were married. And then I retired from history and other things for quite a while, raised two children.
What made you come to Long Beach?
Oh, and Cliff had lived here before the war, and his family really lived all over the United States, but he spent most of his formative years in Longview, Washington. And he joined the Navy, hoping to be an aviation cadet, but was washed up because one eye wasn't perfect. And but during his tour of service, he was often into Long Beach, and he thought it was a gorgeous place. And considering the difference between Longview, Washington, and Long Beach, it probably did look like a gorgeous place. So after his tour of duty, he bought some planes and he had a flying school over at the Long Beach Airport.
What was it called?
It was called the KLM Flying School because he had two somewhat silent partners who were still in the Navy, and it was their initials. And he had that. It was established in the old Doherty hangar with Doherty's bloody clothes from when he was killed in the crash thrown in one corner of an attic. And I wish I could remember more details, but of course not having been there, they aren't as fresh in my mind. But that went on for several years, and then when World War II came along, he got rid of his planes and went up to Canada and enlisted in the Canadian Air Force. and was flying officer up there until this country went in the war, and then practically all of those people transferred. As he described it, it was quite interesting because they had a train that went as closely parallel to the border as it was possible to do, and at various stops they would just, the various American servicemen and Canadian and RAF enlistments would come across the border, and you got out at one end of the train, and when you finished going through the cars, you were an officer of the United States Army, or the United States Air Corps, it was called then. All your paperwork and all your medical examinations and your psychiatric examination was carried on that way. And from thence they just decided where you were going to go, and practically everyone went to Mather Field, and then he was sent to Chicago for probably, as so often happened, they just didn't know what to do with people, so that was another staging area. And we were married in Florida when he was going through B-17 school.
Mm-hmm. Was he a pilot on B-17?
Yes, his first pilot.
Mm-hmm. Where was he stationed then? In England?
No. He went through the entire course for B-17s and was with his crew waiting for reassignment. They went to Rapid City, South Dakota, and he would have been in the 8th Air Force, but I suppose very fortunately for him, about that time, they had caught up with the not perfect eye, and he was had to wait for a waiver. Well, the paperwork took so long, it took 3 months. By that time, his crew was gone, so he was transferred to the Air Transport Command, and he did fly quite a bit overseas, but he, fortunately for him, was never in the European theater. All his crew were killed.
Were you able to live?
Pretty much, some of the time.
So was that?
Well, we were married in Florida, but he finished his course there, and then I went with him out to Spokane, where they took more training, and then to Rapid City. And then I went home to my parents in Chicago and stayed until he had a more settled place, which was quite a bit later. It seemed a long time to me. I suppose it was something less than a year. And then we were in a little godforsaken town in New Mexico because there was a big base at Dalhart, Texas, in the Panhandle. And its housing was non-existent in Dalhart. We lived in Clayton, New Mexico, and it was really fun here. It was very nice. And then we went to Mississippi and other places in Texas. There were lots of installations in Texas. Ray was in the Air Force with me.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
He must have known.
He was in B-17.
Was he?
Yeah, that's why I asked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did he go through his training?
In Texas, at, I can't remember. He was in Kansas and
mm-hmm.
Texas. I'll remember later.
Well, it's not important. I just thought there were so many of those places in West Texas.
Yeah.
We did have one occasion which was kind of fun, and I don't know why it sticks in my memory. We did have a house in Dallas for a while, and during that period of time, just as a fluke, he was assigned to take a squadron of planes down to someplace in Central America, Panama, I think. Why? I don't know. I wasn't politically aware at that time. Somehow I thought Panama was out of the sphere of the war, and it took so long on these little puddle jumpers. They were trainers, and they couldn't go if the weather was bad because they had no instruments, that a friend and I drove along, and we hippity-hopped down through Texas to ending up in Brownsville before we went back to Dallas. I can remember being taken up in the trainer It must at Corpus Christi. And but that's one incident that sticks in my mind, besides all the other, at this point, amusing things that happened. Were you and Ray married during the war?
No, I didn't meet him until...
Later?
1948.
Oh, well. Well, as I say...
He got out of the Air Force and he was still not 21 years old.
Oh, my goodness, just a baby.
Yeah, the war was over.
Mm-hmm.
So, then he came back to Long Beach.
We came back to Long Beach, and plus again went into, for a short period of time, into instructing. There were all sorts of flying schools opening up, and it seemed like a pretty good occupation. But then he went with what was at that time Douglas Aircraft and stayed with them for quite a long period of time.
What did he do with Douglas?
He was test pilot, engineering test pilot.
What did that involve?
Well, it's not the sort of thing you think of as the right stuff necessarily, because it's really doing engineering runs on finished planes, which can be hairy enough, but it's not out at Muroc Dry Lake or mm-hmm. as it used to be known.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we did used to fly out to Pancho Barnes sometimes.
Did you?
Yes.
Well, that's another story.
Well, that's another story. Well, I...
It must have been a kind of a close fraternity among the pilots around here in Long Beach. I mean, he had the earlier years in the 30s.
Yes, late 30s, and yes, he just knew a whole lot of them. And when I said, I can't even remember what Doherty, which this field is really named for, first name was, but
Earl
Doherty, that's right. And but Kay Doherty was. I don't know whether she's still alive or not, is she? We used to see her fairly often, and old Cliff had known a lot of people, like Jackie Cochran and so forth. It was a...
Goodnight, wasn't she?
Yeah, Dorothy Goodnight we knew, too. I don't know what happened to Dorothy Goodnight. They used to live over here in La Linda.
I think she died.
Did she die?
She died.
The house was moved away, and so I thought it was unlikely they were still living here.
Well, I interviewed a man named Herb Lewin.
Oh, did you? Oh, we knew Herb and Cecilia very well.
Oh, really?
Herb used to be airport manager, as you probably know.
Mm-hmm. I interviewed him, and he told me about all the efforts to get that airport built, and the negotiations to get Douglas to come.
Yes. What a good thing it's been in many ways for Long Beach. I suppose it's still the dominant industry, isn't it?
I think Douglas is, maybe the Navy, maybe very second.
Yes.
Well, the overall industry low is certainly large.
Oh, yes. I think that the Navy base used to be more impressive than it was, and in fact, a few years ago, it sank down to being just a supply center. But now it's come back up, and of course, having the New Jersey refitted here, or do you say retrofitted? I never know. Was a big boost for Terminal Island. But, yes, all those people, you know, Herb and Cecilia were very... Well, they were travelers, all right. I don't think they ever lived in any place here in Long Beach for more than a year, and then they'd buy another house. And we used to see them not too long ago. They bought down in that Sun City development near, was that when you interviewed him?
Yeah, well, he didn't live in here, but he came up.
Mm-hmm. And then they moved, I heard from a mutual friend, but they moved back up to Lompoc, where they lived for a while. All of those people like to be near service installation. So
well,
they'd
he
is near Vandenberg.
No, he's in March. He
still is?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Last spring.
Well, then he must still be there. Lorraine evidently was wrong. I thought I couldn't send them a Christmas card because I didn't have the right address. Well, what else did Herb have to tell you?
Well, he told me about some of the political infighting in the city as far as getting the airport built, and he was very active in the Junior Chamber of Commerce, which he didn't get enough credit for helping to get that airport built. And he talked about early days in aviation and Jack Knight from TWA, I think he's a pilot at American Airlines and that sort of thing. So, well, tell me now, Cliff, when you talk about his flying school in the 30s, KLM,
mm-hmm.
How many planes did he have? You said he saw.
He had four, and I can't tell you what they all were. I remember he had one he said he wished he'd never gotten rid of, that Ray might know, though he's so much younger, he called a Buell Pup. And it was just a one-seater, and it's a tremendous collector's item now. I suppose they were Stearmans and Pipers and things like that. But he sold them all before he went to Canada, which may or may not have been a good idea. But it was too much of a problem to retain them and store them, or even worse, to have them used, because hull insurance was so terribly expensive, was then, is now.
Mm-hmm. Well, then when you came to Long Beach, where did you live?
Well, we lived up here in the north end of town. It was very hard to get a place when we got back here. We would have preferred to rent until we knew where we wanted to live, but we bought a little house over on Falcon in the 4,300 block, and we lived there for several years when we bought over here. I liked this area of town because it looked more to me like what I was used to in the Middle West, where the houses were all different. And it seemed more like a neighborhood to me than those what were then very barren, newly constructed tract houses. It didn't seem to me like a place to live, and then we just continued living here. We never really planned it. I think we always expected we'd move again. But I like this part of town, this end of town. I don't really like it right down by the water. It's too damp for me. And Cliff didn't care where he lived, so it worked out well.
No, it was close to Douglas.
Yes, it was very convenient. As he always said, he had, he never knew what commuting was. He was never more than 10 minutes from the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he retired from Douglas, he continued going over there. He was active, in fact, until just almost immediately before he died. He used to go over there every day, and he did do some dealing in planes and so forth, enough to keep his hand in and see what was happening.
When did he retire?
From Douglas?
Let's
see, that would have been about 1970, I guess. I'm not very good about these dates. Time flows past me. And
yeah. Well, you're here in Los Cerritos area, and did you get involved? What kind of activities did you get involved in?
Yes. I had the young boys, so I did all the detail about PTA and...
Oh. Let's
read a
school.
No, they went to Longfellow, because we lived over there.
That's
the Longfellow district. And then when we moved over here, they preferred to continue. And at that time, I understand it's a problem now, but now it was not that far for them to go. And so they went through Hughes and Polly, and I was very involved in PTA at that time. What did they call us, room mothers or something of the sort? And then I became interested in the various civic groups in town, the Los Angeles Philharmonic Auxiliary, and in the museum.
The Long Beach Museum.
And though members of the Los Angeles County Museum were only people who attend there, I've never volunteered there. And I was a member of the Friends, and then after a while, Friends of the Museum, and after a while, that was incorporated into the, there was the Museum Association, the Long Beach Museum, and the Friends, which was a working arm, and finally the director, I've now forgotten which one, but I think Fred Black felt it would be better if they were all in one umbrella group, so they were. And
was that successful?
Yes, I think it was very successful at the particular time when I joined, which was not at the formation of the group, because I was in Europe for a year, and I joined when I came back, and I think there had been two or three presidents before me. There was Jane Helm and Kay Raggedy, but I think Jane Helm served for 2 years. And then I was president of that, and which was extremely enjoyable, and I met a lot of people that I still see all the time.
What did the Friends do?
The Friends were a support organization in the, from various angles. They ran a gallery where you could rent pictures, which is similar to the one at the Los Angeles County Museum and elsewhere, and it was very successful, both from a point of view of raising money, and also it did provide a wonderful service to the community. It was very, very popular, and I think that it was open 3 or 4 days a week. Staffing was always a problem because we were all young and had small children. But it certainly was open weekends and a weekday or two in the afternoons. And we used to go to the galleries on La Cienega and in that area, and with local artists, and they would just contribute their works for the rental, of which a portion went to them and a portion was retained for expenses. And I believe, but I can't remember exactly, that if you couldn't live without the painting you rented or the art object, the price of the rental was taken off the purchase price. And I remained very active in the Friends after I was no longer president. And I'm still a member, but I'm afraid I'm not a very good member because people are supposed to work. Oh, and they had a bazaar every year, which was the big money raiser. And they also helped with things like monthly receptions. They did work very hard, and I wish I could remember how many members there were at that time. But I suppose 40, and all of them were very dedicated and worked very hard. It probably shifted between that and a few more. Mm-hmm. And I still see a lot of the people that I knew then, and we remained friends. And many of the people who I thought of at that time as older that were in the Museum Association, and I still see them.
So now you think that the two of them, there is no such thing as a friend? Or is it
there are the Friends, but they do not have a separate entity. It used to be that their financial arrangements were handled separately. And I don't know why the director didn't care for various aspects of this divided situation, but he did not, and they seemed to get along just as well. In a sense, it had not much has changed because they still have their bazaar and they raise money, and I suppose it's not as considerable as it used to be. I thought the bazaars, oh, I think there were yearly parties, perhaps dances, or maybe...
Were
you
docents?
No, there were no docents at that time, or there were docents, but they were not drawn from the Friends. It's hard to remember that the museum didn't have much patronage at that time. The population was smaller, and there were several women, I think they were all women, who contributed their time as docents. In fact, Virginia Laddie's mother, Mrs. Hester, used to volunteer, and she would go over and the curator or the director would give her a little orientation about the current show, and they just carried on from there. It was nothing as formalized as the courses that they have now, which are excellent,
mm-hmm.
but it was much less organized, much more off the cuff. I am just amazed when I hear the budgets for these various organizations, because I can remember when I first became president of Friends, Mina Guerin and I went to see about the insurance that we had to have, and I think it was a little over $100. I have no idea what insurance costs now. But when we got through, we had exactly $5 left in the friend's bank account. But, and I think due for $5 a year was practically nothing, but then $5 was extended itself further. One thing that I did after, long after, several years after I was president, they decided that they wanted to have a bookstore or a shop. Was not necessarily books. Are you familiar with the museum?
Yes, sir. You know, I have read pictures there in the good old days.
Well, you know where you still walk in?
Yeah.
There's a sort of a hallway that goes through the other side of the gallery. Well, at that time, that was where the information desk was. And in that small space between the two areas, there was the shop. And I had $100 to start off with, to start this great venture, and I had some very good advice, particularly from the man who ran the shop at the, what was then the all-inclusive Los Angeles Museum. It was the Art Museum, the Museum of Natural History, the whole thing. And he told me how to get things on consignment and where to get a good buy on postcards. And I think I spent most of the money on postcards. And then many artists contributed things on consignment. So we had quite a bit there, and those days I even had Christmas cards on consignment from the Metropolitan, New York. Whether they do that anymore or not, I don't know. Certainly not after I got through with them, with the leftovers. Counting them, I'm sure it didn't come out right.
Have you had any training in art?
Oh, just the general training one gets.
And history,
art history, and then I did when I was down at Parker, or at Parker, we used to go down to the Art Institute and take some classes, but that was the only formal sort of training I had, except for sheer pleasure of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, then with the Los Angeles Philharmonic Auxiliary, had musical training, what did you do with the song?
No, just the same sort of generalized training that I would have had in art training. And with that auxiliary, I was membership chairman of the... There's an auxiliary, and at that time there was a junior auxiliary. I don't know at that juncture, or at this juncture, whether they're separated anymore. I don't think that they are. But that was very large at that time. You know, I know that the Long Beach Symphony had to be going but at that time, and pursued enthusiastically by people who were interested in it, but the Los Angeles Phil had much more power, and I suppose that in that junior auxiliary there must have been 150 members. And at one time I was... Membership, ways and means, even worse than membership, ways and means. And but then you got great assistance from the senior arm. And let's see, after that, then I think it should be mentioned, I try and mention this all the time, that it was Virginia Laddie's idea, really, about the affiliate. She was taking her master's out at the state, in what was State College then, in art history, and she just felt that there was so little communication between the town and the gown. And so she gathered a group of us together, and she told me that I was going to be president. She acted several times as my gray eminence, you might say, and I said, I don't want to be president. I'd been president, and I don't like it. Like Sherman, if I, you know, will not serve. Yes, well, if nominated, will not run, and if elected, will not serve. And I said, why don't you? You're wonderfully capable. And she said, well, I just make people mad. So she propelled me into this position. And again, I had a wonderful time. It was, I think, probably forming something is easier than going on with something, because we were all new to it, and lots of enthusiasm, and that lasted for about a year and a half, because we were formed and had the blessing of the then head of the college.
We
had plenty of encouragement for Dr. Lawrence Peterson.
You mean President McIntosh?
President McIntosh, that's what I was trying to think of. And then he later, and this was in the midwinter, I think, that we proposed this and did the base work and so forth. And then somewhat later he decided that perhaps this would be divisive, that the various other colleges would want to have their organization. And so the whole affair lapsed, and then somewhat later he thought better of it. So the next year we really got going.
So you're saying that this first idea of Virginia's, of you all, would that have been in 1963 or 62?
62 in the winter, and winter 62 started. And 63, yes. And
because in your statement that you gave for the history of the affiliates, Fine Arts Affiliates is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that there were various administrative concerns, you know, that took a while. Is this what you mean?
Yes, that's exactly what I mean. I suppose when I said that, it seems more tactful to say that those were administrative concerns was the umbrella term, but actually it was